Got it.
That's another bull in the basement. And this is so, like, this is the only thing AVP that I'm happy about COVID for was my introduction to Zoom. I know a lot of people like hate Zoom because they're on it. You were telling me before you even started recording that you're on it all the time and have been right. Like for 2 years straight, pretty much. You probably hate it to death. So I apologize. But, right. But man, it's allowed me to do this and get in contact with people and have them tell their stories by virtue of this podcast that we've kind of created. So this is awesome. So, this is behind the curtain for everybody. So when people watch this, when you're watching this now, folks, and you see all the fancy banner around it, that doesn't exist when we're doing these things. So you can read right now that this is Alex Van Pelt. So I don't have to tell you, but this is Alex Van Pelt, the current offensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns, former Bills quarterback, former Bills offensive coordinator, former Bills broadcaster. And I consider him a great friend. How's Brooke and the kids? And by the way, how old are the kids?
Man, I don't know when it happened. It happened fast, though. I think I woke up one day. My oldest daughter is 22.
What?
Yeah, 22. And she's a junior. I don't even know what she's a lifelong college student at DePaul University. And then my middle daughter, Paige, she's 20. Just turned 20 in February. She's at the University of Cincinnati. So she stayed when we left Cincinnati. She stayed there and went to school. And then my son, Jack, he's a junior. He's 16 right now. And he's in high school here in Cleveland.
Is Jack an athlete?
Jack is not an athlete. Jack is a rock star.
Really?
Yeah. Jack is a guitarist. He's never really been into athletics. He picked up the guitar at age 8 and he plays unbelievable guitar. So a couple lessons a week for the last 8 years. Just played a show through the School of Rock where they put on a couple actually live concerts. And he shreds on the guitar. It's pretty cool.
That's cool. So is that through the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, it's just School of Rock. It's I think you franchise in and it gives the kids a chance to learn a whole album, play a whole album. There's a director, there's the whole band. And then after a semester, they have two live shows at real venues. So we got to go see Jack shredded up on big stages. And I got to sit back and drink beers and watch my 16-year-old play guitar, you know, so beats the hell out of a dance recital.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's pretty awesome, man. So, yeah. Like, what is he playing? Like, is he playing modern
stuff? He's into My Chemical Romance was okay. The album that they played. It was called The Black Parade. I guess I'm not a big My Chem fan, but it was really cool. So he had two shows, and he wrapped that up. And
awesome.
On to the next group. So they'll pick 5 or 6 genres of music, teach it up through the fall, and then they'll have a show in the winter, which it was really a great experience.
Very cool. And what are your daughters going to be when they grow up?
Well, I have one that's in the film, and she's a screenwriter. She loves to write. So she's at DePaul University. Sorry about that. And she's in film. She loves it. Very creative, artistic. My wife's artist. Her dad was an artist, art teacher for years. So they got that bug from him. Paige, my other daughter at the University of Cincinnati, is in sports administration. So we have conversations every day about, reverse draft order and how that helps parity in the NFL. So she's all in. So I feel like I'm getting an education again through her in sports administration.
That's cool, man. That's awesome. So I got to let people know a couple of things about you and me. So you did one of the nicest things that's ever been done to me. We were on a road trip when I was doing radio with you with the Bills. And it's so weird because I didn't realize, did you only do 1 year radio or was it two?
It was 2 years.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. So anyway, one of the 2 years we were out in San Francisco, I think it was a Christmas. I think we were there on Christmas doing radio, and we were in this super high-end restaurant down in the Trocadero or whatever the hell it's called in San Francisco. And it was just a group of us from the broadcast team. And you bought me the most expensive drink I've ever had in my life. You bought me like this $40 shot of like really high end whiskey. And I'm like, well, I'm not really a whiskey guy, but it was really expensive. So I kind of have to drink this. So, but it was like an appreciation kind of thing, a cool Christmas thing that I've never forgotten that. I've told that story 100 times, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that.
Do you recall what it was?
I think it was Balvenie 21-year-old scotch, maybe.
Oh, that sounds
probably
right.
My go-to. It sounds about the right price back then. Now, I don't know if you get it for that.
Right.
But that's a Jim Kelly thing that Jim taught me. You take care of your guys. You know, you take care of your guys. And that's something I learned from Jim a long time ago. You guys were my guys, and I wanted to make sure that you knew it and know how much I appreciated you. And I learned that from Jim.
Well, that was super nice of you. And the other thing I want to tell you is, and I know you've heard this 100 times too, but you were, I've never even thought to call you this, but I thought about it today when I knew I was doing this tonight. You are like Radio Romo. Like you were Tony Romo before Tony Romo. And obviously you were both quarterbacks, but like it was uncanny. Like I'd be in the booth with you and I'd watch you literally. You knew what the down and distance were. You knew what obviously the yard line was. You knew where it was in the game. And you would literally see a formation where there was 10 or 11 or 12 or 20 or 21 or whatever. And you would be like, they're going to do X. And every time you got it right. It was like mind blowing. Like you were a savant when it came to that. So I got to ask you, is that just from experience? Is that from like film study? Is that just from seeing everything that you had seen over your 10-ish year, playing career? Was it the NFL's kind of a copycat league? Was it a little bit of all of that?
A little knowledge of the system helped, you know, because I was still friends with Drew and those guys. So I kind of knew. The second year that I did the radio, I actually was a volunteer coach. So I actually would go into the offices. Coach Malarkey gave me an office. I would drop my kids at school. I would go into work and then I would leave to pick them up. I was not paid. I wasn't in meetings, but I had an idea what was going on. So maybe I cheated a little, but you know, as a quarterback though, you see the whole picture of years of experience of watching the film and understanding the coverage, the concept, the formation, you can piece it together. And I think Romo is one of the best in the business. By far, I love it. Sounds like he smoked a cigar and drank a couple whiskeys before he goes on, which I like also. But I'm really into him. When he calls a game, I'm like, hey, turn the volume up. This guy knows what he's talking about.
For anyone that watches these, they know that I'm all over the place with these because I'm just sort of stream of consciousness. I usually like listening to them interviewing, and it kind of spurs me onto something. So I got to ask you very quickly: is Myles Garrett the most freakish athlete you've ever seen? Or if not, how close is he? And if there's anybody more freakish, who might it be?
There's some freaks. He's definitely in the top freak categories. Top five freaks, I would say, if that's a category. I'd put him up there with the Julius Peppers. You're just guys that are like once in a decade. You know, you're going to get a guy that's, looks like, Tarzan with speed and the aggressiveness and the moves. He's slippery. Very, very, very generational player, and there's a few of those. Javon Curse, I think his nickname was the Freak back in the day. He was super fast, long. Miles is lean, long. I mean, you saw him block a shot in the All-Star game, celebrity game the other day.
Yeah.
Just a freak athlete. We're lucky to have him. He's something else.
And so before I'm going to break this down into a couple things. I want to go through your brain being an offensive coordinator, see how you work. I think a lot of fans would love to get that because that's one thing you just don't hear about or learn about. So I want to ask you about that. I definitely want to ask you about your time in the NFL as a player, but I got to ask you about some of your friends. So famously you worked in Green Bay and you worked very closely with Aaron Rodgers, who seemingly is in the news like every day. Yeah. Is being mysterious fun for him? Because it seems that way. People will like ask, hey, what do you think of Aaron Rodgers? I say, I love Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is hysterical. He's obviously an amazing athlete and quarterback, Hall of Famer, first ballot, yada, yada, yada. But he just seems to kind of not take life too seriously. Is that a good read on him?
I think that's come in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of figured it out, spiritually, emotionally. For him, he was always really intellectual, extremely smartest guy I've been around, football mind-wise, processing, the ability to quickly understand the issues of a play, issues that defense presents. The best I've ever been around as a thrower, as the ability to move out of the pocket and extend plays. He wouldn't like this, but I usually refer to him as the unicorn because they're rare. And if you see one, that's him. Really special player. special human. I know there's controversy with a lot of the stuff that he does, but down on the inside, it's a really good man. Does a lot of great things for a lot of people, you know, that doesn't get out there in the media. But I think he does. I think he's really at peace with himself and who he is right now. And it's fun to watch him play football, no doubt.
He's been outspoken about you, and he clearly loved and loves you, not to the Randall Cobb level, right? Like he didn't. that didn't happen. But whatever. Interesting dude, and that's a cool dynamic, and one of the benefits of you having been in the league and been around a guy like that. Nate Hackett's another guy I want to talk to you about. He was here for a little bit in Buffalo. You played for his dad, right?
Right. Nathaniel was a ball boy on my University of Pittsburgh team in 1989, is when I first met Nathaniel. I think he was six. He was our ball boy. I remember the day that he decided to get into coaching. It was right after, I think, UC Davis. He was at Stanford doing, and then he decided to coach, and his dad called me. He's like, "You're never going to believe this. Paul Hackett, you're never going to believe this." And it was like, "What happened? What's wrong?" You know, and he's like, "Nathaniel's getting into coaching." He was like distraught. You know, I thought he would learn, you know, from my experiences. We got to embrace it and go. And he's just gone, you know, 100 miles per hour straight ahead. I was lucky enough to bring him to Buffalo. When I was there, he was our quality control coach. At that time, you know that he's going to be a great coach in this league. He's got a ton of energy, great mind, ahead of the game, innovative, entertaining, I think is one of the things that's a strength of his, and really, really excited to see what he can do out in Denver. I know he's excited for the opportunity, and stud, you know, he again, whenever you have somebody that you love and you bring up, and it's like a, you know, you're kind of a big brother mentor too, to see those guys have success is what it's all about. So I'm very happy for him, and I hope he, you know, has great success in Denver, which I know he will.
I'm pretty sure
that's the type of person he is.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I didn't know him well, but I remember him being in Buffalo in that position and being on some road trips with him and just him being a really good guy. But I also remember you telling me probably 10 years ago or so that he was going to be a head coach someday. You were that confident that he was so football smart and had just the perfect makeup, personality, and football IQ to become a great coach.
Yeah, and he's a great dancer, which a lot of people don't know.
I did not know that. Now we do.
Hip-hop, not slow dancing. I've never
seen. Okay, all right, very good. Then I got to ask you, and I don't know how much you know about him, but obviously it's your alma mater. How much have you seen of Kenny Pickett, and what do you make of him in the NFL?
Yeah, watch a ton of him already.
Yeah.
Going into the combine. Watch a ton of them at Pitt, obviously. Saw them live this year against Clemson. We had a mini bye week, a Thursday night game, so I got to get back to see him live. Really impressed. Good player. You know, I think he'll have a successful NFL career. I definitely, you know, have been impressed watching him play live. Watching the film is fun, too, because now you're like, okay, yeah. And it reconfirms what you see on TV. You know, I think he's a day one pick that has a bright future. He's a big guy, throws it really well, really accurate, and can also move. So, you know, those are things you look for as a coach. You know, does he have the complete game? And I think he does.
Yeah. I mean, just watching him, I see a lot of Justin Herbert in him. I obviously see some Josh Allen in him. You know, basically the same kind of size as those guys, same kind of athletic ability. I don't know about his arm strength, but yeah, I mean, certainly some promise. So you mentioned, you know, watching guys as they approach the combine, like, what are your days like? Like, just like now, like, is your day, are you looking at college guys? Are you looking at veteran free agents? Are the scouts and the whether they're college guys or pro guys, are they coming to you and being like, "Hey, what kind of guys do you need?" Like, what are you doing now approaching the draft?
So right now, like the last 2 weeks, we finished up the restricted free agency or unrestricted free agents. We've looked at all the pro guys. I think I have 15 guys total I watched and graded and wrote reports on. And then once those are turned in, you get your college guys. So now I have 22 college guys I have to look at multiple positions, not just quarterback. So really that's for me to watch a guy and write a guy's report takes me a half a day. So take 3 or 4 hours at least to get a good feel of who that player is, where I feel comfortable enough to write a report on them. So what we'll do is we also have scheme evaluation where you go back and you really dissect the whole season from last year. We ran wide zone to the open side 118 times or 64 times for an average of 4.6. How do we make it better? Do we like it? So you're evaluating what you did this year and making your corrections on your season moving forward. That would happen in the morning, 8 to 11:30. We would sit in as a staff and watch all the last year's tape and decide, do we want to do this again? How do we make it better? You know, is it fine the way it is? And you take a lunch, and then from say 1 to 4 in the afternoon, 1 to 5, you're doing your college guys, you're watching. So it's scheme evaluation in the morning, personnel in the afternoon, you know, for the full week.
So when you got the staff and you're watching the games, is there a lot of, like, do you need some beeps? Like if there was some audio recordings going on? Like, would there be some?
Oh, yeah. You were not always sitting in that meeting room. It's a bunch of guys talking about ball with dips in their mouth and spitting sunflower seeds everywhere and coffee breath. Yeah. Those are fun meetings, though. But I'm lucky enough to work with Bill Callahan. In my opinion, he's the best O-line coach in football. And we're doing the run game this week. So it's been fun just to hear his experiences, you know, and how do we become better. At the same time, you're kind of evaluating players as well for their development plan. Like, you know, how do we get the right guard better? How do we get this left tackle better? You know, we highlight areas of improvement as well as we're going through the scheme evaluation. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of F-bombs, you know, a lot of laughter. You always cutting right up in there. So we keep it light this time of year.
You're like, I can't believe that play worked.
Oh, yeah, just like you drew it up. That's that right. Comes up a lot, you know. Right. Wrong defense, steps the wrong way to start, and the guy makes a great play, and you're like, oh, just how we drew it up.
Right. You know? That's hysterical. You brought up a couple of really solid, powerful groups on your team. I mean, your O-line has got a bunch of studs up there. We know about your backs, who are both studly. Those two groups, I'm sure – were a lot of the time fun to watch. Clearly, you know, the season didn't end up how you wanted it to be, but man, those are two really talented groups you guys got.
Yeah. Now, Nick Chubb is a special person. Great pro.
For sure.
You know, Kareem Hunt's explosive, everything you'd want. We were lucky enough to have two really good ones. And then when we had a young back named De'Ernest Johnson that came on this year at 146 yards, I think, against Denver on a Thursday night, you know, when both backs were down. So we feel really good about our backfield.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so now we see the offensive coordinator of the play calling around the NFL, and he's, you know, it's this, and, you know, the colorful charts and all that, and they're calling the play. And you guys got, you know, whatever, upwards of 30 seconds maybe to get a play call in, right? So walk me through I'm going to give you down a distance, yard line, time on the clock, and the score. And you tell me what you think you would maybe call in that situation. Do I need to tell you the team you're playing against? Yeah, I will. Okay. Sure. So, okay. You're playing the Bengals. It's 3rd and 4.
Okay.
You're at their 39. 3 minutes left in the third quarter. You're down 8.
3 minutes left to go in the third quarter, down 8, 3rd and 9.
Third and 4 at the 39. Their 39.
At their 39, yeah. Plus 39 going in.
Yeah, yes.
I would expect some type of one high man in that situation. So I would think that maybe we would get a shot play. I would call which hash?
It would be on the right hash.
Okay, so dice right, cozy, X short, 3 jet, F pressure, Z drive, halfback burst. And I would use a cadence on 3rd and 4. So we might go on a dummy 2 just to try to get him to jump off sides.
180!
Yeah, white 80. Now, the other thing in that situation on the plus 39 yard line is that now in the analytics would tell you that green is a 4th and 2. So now I only need 2 yards to get to green.
Right.
Which means we go for it on 4th and 2. So maybe pop a run in there.
Man. Okay. So you just read off a play call to us. Obviously, the quarterback needs to know the entire play. He has to know what everybody's doing. But, like, what parts are for who? Like,
dice right, cozy, Dice Right Cozy X Short, that's the formation. Dice Right's 2x2. All right tells you that it's a F's inside. X Short's the Cozy's the close alignment by the Z. X Short's a motion to bring them inside. Two Jets the protection. F Pressure is the route. Z Drive is the other side of the route. Halfback Burst is the tag. And then you get the cadence.
Okay. So so for people that think pro football players aren't intelligent, to be able to digest all of that and know exactly what you're supposed to do, and I get it. There's lots of repetition and study, and I understand that. Sure. But my God, to the common man who has never been exposed to that at that level, holy cow, man. But again, everybody knows what they're listening for, right? So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All I need to hear if I'm the offensive lineman is right to jet.
Right.
If I'm the Z, I got to hear Cozy Z drive. You know, halfback, we just told you protection and burst. So we told you your protection and your route. You know, F pressure is a combination route of two. So everybody should know what to do. Concept, conceptual learning. Cool.
Are you getting the first down on that play that you called?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, no question. Could be a touchdown, actually.
Okay. It's a touchdown. Got it. Okay. Let's go to you now in your playing career. I apologize because I didn't know this. I didn't know you were an eighth round pick of the Steelers, which, and by the way, the eighth round doesn't exist anymore.
No longer existing. I was that 6 foot, you know, just barely, maybe if I made it over six, I was excited. Listed as 6'2" in the program, you know, one of those deals. Didn't have a strong arm, but was smart and could play and anticipate and accurate, you know, so you could buy some time when you have those traits. I went to the Steelers in the eighth round, did not deserve to make the team. Got released, sat out for a majority of that season. At that time, Paul Hackett had been fired as Pitt's head coach after that season and was hired by the Kansas City Chiefs as the offensive coordinator, brought Mike McCarthy with him as a quality control coach. Joe Montana came aboard that year as well. So Joe pulls a hamstring late in the season, and I know the system inside and out. Luckily, I was the guy they called in. So for three games, I dressed, stood on the sideline. I bummed a dip off of George Brett on a Monday night game against the Packers and was there for 3 weeks until Joe got healthy, and then I got released again.
That's phenomenal.
Now, there's a good story for you, Paul.
Yeah.
The night I got released, it was a Tuesday. Brooke flew in Wednesday. We had Wednesday night Pearl Jam tickets in Wichita Falls, old school Pearl Jam.
Yeah.
Three. So they played an auditorium, basically.
Wow.
And it was unbelievable. I picked her up. God. The good news, we're going to see Pearl Jam. Bad news, I'm no longer employed. So that was my highlight of Kansas City. Got back with those guys after the season, got signed to a futures contract, went through training camp, off-season program, was released again. And then I believe Jim got hurt against the Vikings, I want to say, in 94, came in the backside of that last two games of the 94 season, and then stuck. You know, was lucky enough to be there for a while.
Long time. Yeah, for sure. Who was the guy when Montana got, was it like Steve Bono, like Elvis?
Dave
Kerbeck?
Craig.
Dave Craig.
Oh, old school God. Dave Craig.
Wow. Yeah. Man.
Yeah, it was actually around Thanksgiving, and Thursday we went to the Craig's house for Thanksgiving, Brooke and I. So the Craig sat us over. Great guy, old time quarterback.
Sure.
Wabash College, I think it is, no longer exists.
Wow. It's crazy. Tell me about, and I want to go through your Bills career too, but tell me about the Frankfurt Galaxy. Mm. What was that experience like? And did any guys come out of your team and have impactful NFL careers that you're aware of?
Absolutely not.
No.
Great, great, great league. Really had a great time when I was there. Funny story. I go down to Tampa. I had a chance to, through a Bills coach, I had a chance to go to Amsterdam or Frankfurt. And Brooke was 3 months or 6 months pregnant with Jack, my third child. Got down to the training camp, worked through all the training camp. I was working with Frankfurt. Brooke says, no way in hell you're going to Amsterdam. You're going to Frankfurt. I said, all right, I'm going to Frankfurt. Then when I got down there, I said, you know what? This is not the right thing. You're 6 months pregnant. I'm leaving you with two kids to go coach in Frankfurt for 3 months. And she said, you go do it. You know, you need to do it. the guy, the head coach there, Mike Jones at the time, gave me the coordinator position after I coached. He saw what I could do. He said, I will let you call the plays if you come over. So that was my first time ever, you know, calling plays, putting in an offense. The staffs were small. You know, I used to have to go to Kinko's over there to print off my game plan each week. It was really cool. Great experience for a young coach, a young referee, a young announcer. You know, it was just a growing. You could grow. You know, if you called a play on 4th and 4 to win the game and it didn't work, you didn't read shit about it in the paper after that. Like there was nobody on you. Right. You had the freedom to be creative and just be a coach and learn how to coach, learn how to referee, learn how to call the game. So really, I learned so much over there in my 1 year. I actually left one game early and came back, and Jack was born that week.
No
so
kidding.
I said, Mike, I got to be back for my son's birth or my wife will not let me come in the house. So I left him with one game left and I came back. But originally I went over, I didn't get paid. I paid room and board, and I got to eat in the mess hall. But it was a great experience for me to be able to actually run the game, call the plays, put the game plan together. Really cool experience.
And remarkable that Brooke knew you so well that there was no way you were going to Amsterdam.
Smart. She's wise beyond years.
All right. So let's talk about your Bills teams. Man, holy cow. You were on 4 playoff. I mean, people forget about this. They think that kind of like after the Super Bowls, the Bills are just kind of like, nah. But right. You were on 4 teams that went to the playoffs and won at least 10 games each of those seasons. So what was it about? I mean, and holy cow, you know, I'm looking back at some of those rosters. God, you had there were some really good players on those teams. So I guess my question is, you know, what kept you guys in that? They went from the 4 Super Bowl years consecutively to 4 out of 5 years, either in a wild card or divisional playoff game, but couldn't get beyond that. Why?
That's a tough one. It's hard to win in the league. You know, everything's you got to 1, get lucky, 2, stay healthy, 3, have the players. It's really hard to put it all together. A lot of luck comes with it too, as well. Why do we not win those games? I mean, you look at the Music City Miracle.
Yeah.
Should have won that game.
Yeah.
I mean, comes down to fluke play here, there. You know, sometimes it's just the way the season goes, you know. Again, it's so precious, as you guys all know, in Buffalo, to actually win a Super Bowl. It's hard. It's not easy. To go 4 times in a row is amazing. I don't know if that'll ever be done again. I really don't. You know, I couldn't tell you why we didn't win them, but I was happy to be a part of them. I know Coach Levy was a big part of that. John Butler, the guys, the scouting guys that came in, Wade Phillips after that. You know, the people we had on our team were exceptional and really good coaches at that time as well. So fortunate to be a part of it. You know, still pulling so hard for you guys to win a Super Bowl. You know, we were all Bills out downstairs in our, you know, the TV room watching the game. And Brooke and I were crushed, you know, after that one. But you guys will get there.
Yeah, I didn't even cry when the Bills lost Super Bowls. And when the Bills took the lead right near the end of the game, I wasn't bawling.
Wept a little.
But yeah, but I was like, this is unbelievable. Like, this is maybe the best game I've ever seen. And we're going to win. And we're going to host the AFC Championship game. And we're going to the Super Bowl. I was overwhelmed with emotion. And, well, we know the outcome, clearly. So.
Right. Like I said, it's so hard, so special when you get a chance to win one. You know, you can't take it for granted. You definitely can't. It's hard to get there and win.
Who are some of the players, outside of maybe some of the obvious ones you played with in Buffalo, who maybe didn't get the pub or the recognition that they maybe should have? I mean, I can think of a couple of the ones. I still think Moulds is one of the most underrated players ever.
First one that came to my mind when you said that was Eric Moulds. You know, he was an elite receiver. There was a stretch of years there where you couldn't cover him, you know, and he was, if you know Eric, he's hilarious. You would think he's Eddie Murphy's little brother. I mean, his comedy, his timing, the way his voice, his reflection, kind of looks like Eddie back in the day with the ball. You know, it was hilarious to be around Eric. He was one of the best guys in the locker room to be around. Great player. He was definitely one of them. I think John Fina was a guy that's underrated. To start 10 years in the NFL at left tackle is hard, you know. And I think he's a guy that deserves a lot of credit, you know, for what he did there, what he brought there. He played Pro Bowl football, left tackle. He played in a game for me. It was 9/11. It was that year. It was the 9/11 year. We played the extra game in Miami, the canceled game on 9/11. He was sick as a dog. I was starting. You know, I said, John, I get it. If you can't go, he's throwing up, you know, the flu deal. He's like, I'm going for you. And I'll never forget that. I got hurt in that game. I ended up tearing the labrum and left the game. And as soon as I left, John came out. So that was kind of like, to me, that he was playing for me. And I really do appreciate that. He's a great player for a long time for him.
Yeah. You know,
he really was. Those are two guys that off the top of my head, Moulds and Fina, underrated, underappreciated for Buffalo.
And you played with some absolute personalities, obviously, in terms of quarterback. You mentioned Jim, but you played with Bledsoe. You were in the midst of Johnson Flutie.
Man. Some good times.
Right.
You know, first off, Jim's a legend. You know, still a very close friend of mine to this day. Love him. Got so much respect for him. You know, he's like a big brother to me. That was really special. And the thing about Jim is he can make you feel so special. You know, the first time I came in, I'm staying at the Sheraton over by the Walden Galleria. You know, I just signed with the team and went through 3 days of practice. This is when he hurt his knee. He said, I'll pick you up at 8:00. We're going to this party at Mike Lotish's house. I'm like, I just met you. Like, I just sat in the room for a week. He wanted you to feel like the family. And that's one thing. Most influential person in my life as far as that leadership, that family is Jim, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Drew was another guy that was a stud, you know, just a stud person, really good family man, you know, salt of the earth, you know, just a really good person. Like, you wanted to hang out with Drew. Rob's another close friend of mine. We were really close. We called it date night. He would be the third wheel with Brooke and I. Just a great person as well. You know, Doug was a tremendous competitor, you know, good dude. So I was lucky enough to be with some really good guys in that room.
Like Rob John, like I got to know Rob pretty well because I was doing the quarterback show for the pregame show back then for radio. And it was interesting because I would do it where I would have to interview both him and Doug like every week because we weren't really sure who was going to play quarterback. Right. So it was kind of awkward. And they both knew that I was interviewing the other.
Right.
There were a handful of times we're like, hey, what Doug say? Hey, what Rob say?
But it's Rob, good always, competition in the room is a good thing.
Yeah, right?
That may have been a little overboard, but it was good.
But I hated Rob because Rob was the most, like, shredded guy I have ever seen.
It's unbelievable.
And he still is. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, you know what, though? He doesn't have as much fun as we do on Friday night.
That's right. That's right.
You know, you want to eat chicken breast and steam rice and broccoli every meal? You could look like that too. I choose not to.
Yeah, he's drinking alfalfa sprout shakes and stuff. Yeah, for no thanks. Kale shakes.
Yeah.
Awful. Absolutely awful. Your favorite? Was there a particular game you remember that was maybe most fond for you in your Buffalo playing days?
I would say probably the Denver game I came into against Elway. Obviously, I mean, the first game I played against Marino and started and won in a shootout. I think it was 9-6. It was a rainy day, but we ended up winning. It was my first start. That was memorable. But to me, I think we played Denver, and I'm not sure, Todd maybe had been the quarterback, Todd Collins. I came in the fourth quarter. They put me in down 20. And we came back and tied it up 20-20, took it to overtime. We lost in overtime. But that was one that I'll never forget. And then I think the Houston Oilers game, the old Houston Oilers. I don't know if you know who those guys are.
Yeah, vaguely.
Came in. It was a game we'd already clinched playoffs. So they started Todd in the first half and me in the second half. And I threw Andre Reed my first NFL touchdown pass. And I think it was his 400th career catch. And he gave me the ball, and I still have that ball. Like, that was Dre. Like, you know, this is my 400th. Good. 400th, big deal. First. So that was memorable.
That's super cool, man. That's awesome. Well, we're on it. We mentioned it a couple of times. You have any opinion on the overtime coin toss rule?
It's so hard. I think both teams need a chance.
Yeah.
You know, if they can make it, you know, I've been on the other side multiple times.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there with Aaron and just give us the ball. We're going to go score and then get the ball back. So I definitely feel the pain in Buffalo. I do think there needs to be an opportunity. However that is, college rules, start at the 30, whatever it is. I think there needs to be an opportunity. Touchdown shouldn't, and it should be an ability to extend it. I don't know if that's, you know, possible or in the thinking, but that, as I feel, both teams should have a chance at that point, because it, really to have a coin toss decide it is, and it doesn't ultimately decide, you still have to stop them, you know, but to not have a chance to rebuttal against a touchdown is tough to take when you're on the other side, for sure.
I know you probably haven't watched them as much as you would like to, but if you were Josh Allen's offensive coordinator, would you touch his game at all?
No. I think Dave's did a great job. You know, Dave Ball did a great job with him, brought him along, taught him, grew him, you know, groomed him, and then put him in a position where he's an elite Pro Bowl player, you know, all pro. Great job by the organization. Dave takes a lot of credit for that, I hope. Kenny Dorsey did a great job. Really liked him coming out. Was a big fan when you guys drafted him. I thought he'd be perfect. Size, the hands, like everything about him. He's playing elite football right now, and I think his time will come.
For sure. Do you have anything for me? You got anything you need to ask me, or anything about Buffalo you need to ask about?
I'm going to look in the back there. Why is there a Chicago Bears?
Okay. All right. Well, that's a fair question. So at one of Brian Moorman's wine pairing events in his auction, there happened to be like this Robbie Gould table where it was like Robbie Gould had signed like his helmet, a cleat, and a football from whatever the Super Bowl he was in when they played the Colts, when Hester had that touchdown return to the Super Bowl in Miami. Okay. Purple Rain, Prince, the whole deal, right? So I had just happened to have been at that Super Bowl, and I see this, and nobody's bidding on it. I'm like, it's like $100. I'm like, okay. So that's why I have a Chicago Bears helmet in my case.
A kicker signed helmet went for $100?
Yeah, I know, right?
No, I'm kidding. Robbie Gould's a stud. No,
he's
a stud. He hadn't missed. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So how's life with you, man?
Life is great. Got my wife, got my pets, got my man cave, the basement.
I like the basement.
Thanks, man. If you were here, you'd be invited into my basement.
I appreciate that. I like to get back there. I don't get back nearly often as I should. But man, we talk about it all the time. A lot of great friends back there, the DiPaolo families. Denise is my wife's great friend, or from there. You know, it's very special in our heart. Obviously, Jim and Tasker and Thurm and those guys are still there. We miss it. We really do.
Well, you're not that far away, and the bar is stocked. And what's the scotch again?
It's a Balvenie.
How do you spell that?
Yeah, Balvinie.
Okay. Balvenie. Yeah.
21-year-old.
Okay.
Portwood. P-O-R-T Wood.
Okay, Portwood. Got it. Scotch.
There it is. Scotch.
Scotchy, scotch, scotch.
Scotchy, scotch, scotch. That's okay. The one.
Very good. So, all right. I will make a special trip to get some of that for when you stop over.
You might have to make some installments now. It's gone up a little bit since we drank it.
Well, that and Bledsoe's wine. I don't know if you've seen what a bottle of Bledsoe's wine costs these days.
A bottle of his wine. I'm keeping that freaking winery open, I think. I get cases of that stuff just to, because he's my guy. Like, I can't not, when they send out the, you know, would you like a case of, I can't say no. That's my guy. So, of course, I'm like, yeah. And then, you know, but it's unbelievable wine. I'm going to have a bottle tomorrow night with dinner, as a matter of fact.
Awesome.
With the best weatherman in Buffalo, Kevin O'Connell.
Shut up.
Kevin's coming down. His son opened a restaurant in Cleveland called the Cleveland Supper Club. And I'm going to dinner with Kevin and his beautiful wife and Brooke tomorrow.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. Good for you, man.
So I'm taking some Bledsoe wine with me.
Good. Excellent. I'm hoping to catch up with him to do this as well. He's really hard to get a hold of. Holy cow. That guy is like on the move, like all the time. And
yeah, you know, when you're helicopter skiing and then coming back on and playing 18 holes, then checking the winery, it's a lot going on.
All right, dude. Wait, listen, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it, man. We love you more than you know, and we're so happy that you're doing so well. And you know, all the best in Cleveland, man. It's always good when the Browns are good. I mean, when the Browns are competitive and the Rust Belt to us in Pittsburgh and the Browns are good, it's good.
That's right. No, I appreciate that, Bull. And you've always been one of my favorites, man. I miss you guys, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
All right, Bull. Take care, buddy.
You got it, man.
Yep.